Welcome, everybody, to the Bangers and Classics podcast. That's with me, James Ruppert, and him, David Malloy. And what have you been up to, David?
Greetings, James. I've been up to various bits and bobs. Took the Jeep back into the garage yet again, though this time I think we may be making some progress with it. But whilst I was there, I saw a very interesting car. I had to wait to be picked up by my other half. And I went for a walk. Now, it's an area near Air Harbour. It's quite an industrial area, but there are a few scattered houses in it. So I thought, take a walk, get some fresh air, etc. And I was walking along the street and thought, blimey, that's a somewhat incongruous car to find part of that house. And I thought, first of all, what was a Rolls-Royce Silver Spirit? But it wasn't. It was a Bentley Mulsanne from probably 81 or 82, judging by the registration plate. Didn't look in the best condition, but it wasn't a wreck either. And I can't remember, James, the last time I saw one of those. I drove a Silver Spirit a few years ago, but I've never driven a Mulsanne. Essentially the same car, of course.
Yeah.
Just in case you're wondering, it was blue.
Lovely.
Yes, and I saw the Integrale again, parked near the animal food shop. So that was it, James. Two car spots this week, but a possible third one of a Volkswagen Beetle under a cover, again, near the garage where the Jeep is, but I didn't want to lift the tarpaulin and have a look to try and figure out if it was a new Beetle or an old Beetle. But it was definitely one or the other.
Oh, well, that's good. Up this way, it's just bangers being used, really. It's people in Rover 75s going about their daily business. It's been quite frosty and cold where I am. So it's people proving that older cars do work. Except when they don't. And we were meeting our friends who've got a pink XJ6. It's one of these sort of X300 ones. And they were rather late for our meeting in a Chinese restaurant. And they phoned. And it was the old fan belt situation. So the fan belt had broken. So they could journey for about 5 minutes and then stop. So it took them an hour to get to us. And I think it probably took me a couple of hours to get home. I think there's a happy ending to it. I think it's all fixed now. But that just shows you the joys of older cars. But also the fact that you could struggle along with it. It is possible. It was old tech enough to know what the problem was and just sort of hang with it and complete your journey, but rather more slowly than you would do otherwise, but at least it didn't come to a complete halt and blow up. So there you go.
Well, thankfully it was the fan belt and not the cam belt. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think we would be going anywhere then, would it?
No. Well, on to news, I think, James.
Oh, is there news?
Oh, it's some news, yes.
Is there?
This afternoon I received a package in the post.
Oh no.
It was from you.
Oh really?
And it was a copy of your new book, Curb Crawler.
Oh right.
And I didn't have a great deal of time because obviously the timing of the podcast to read through it, but well, I did read, I enjoyed very much.
Well, that's very nice of you to say, David. You don't have to say that.
No, I know I don't have to say it, but I did enjoy it. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of it. There's some interesting tales in it, most of which I don't want to spoil for readers because buy a copy and find out for yourselves. There is one reference, though, to, was it Frost Kinnock?
Oh, yes, that's right, yeah.
Did I ever tell you the real David Frost took me to lunch once or to dinner once?
Goodness me.
You're probably thinking, James, David Frost took me to lunch or whatever. You probably think I was standing out in the street begging, saying 50p for cappuccino, Gov, and he gave me a couple of quid to get a sandwich or something. Well, actually, just for once, it wasn't that. Here's the story. There was a memorial service in London. My parents and I were at. And invitation was extended after the memorial service to go to the New Zealand Embassy, New Zealand House in London. And there was a buffet there, a cold buffet. I was 9 at the time, so I thought, oh, great, I'm starving. And so I went to grab some food, got some sandwich, got some crisps, and was probably busily tucking into it, walking back when I clattered into somebody. And I stopped, looked up, apologised, and I thought, oh, blame this guy's on the telly, I know him. And it was David Frost. He was very nice, he asked me what my name was, blah, blah, blah. Your parents here, yes? Oh, I'll come and meet them. And I thought, oh, God, I'm in trouble now. But no, he was an absolutely thoroughly nice chap. Then later on, he took about a dozen people out to dinner. I mean, I say dinner, it was a meal between lunchtime and dinner time. I can't remember the exact time of day. It's probably about 4 o'clock. So probably too late for lunch and a bit early for dinner, but there we have it. And he wouldn't let anyone pay. Now, there were no cameras about, there was no press about. There was no publicity to be gained from this. What you saw, I think, was the genuine David Frost.
Yeah.
And away from the cameras, etc. And he was a thoroughly, thoroughly nice bloke. That's just a digression I'll probably delete from the podcast.
Anyway. Well, I don't think you should, David. That's a very nice tale. And it's very nice to, hear about the real people. As you say, you don't really know what they're like. And he seems like a very genuine chap.
Yeah, he was, yeah. You do hear stories of people who are great in front of the cameras and are absolute horrors as soon as the cameras are turned off. I could tell you a few stories, but I'm not going to do that. Anyway, what about Curb Call, James? You got any comments you want to,
Not really. I mean, it's in a way, it's a celebration of cars, looking at cars and things I did before the internet. The internet, in a way, has spoiled everything. It's made things sort of far too easy, hasn't it, really, in that you can see a car, click a button, and it'll be delivered in a container the following week or something. Whereas in the old days, you had to make a bit of an effort. And also, I'd interviewed a lot of people over the years, and they were quite interesting. And I thought, rather than leave them buried at the back of a filing cabinet, I would bring them to life. And quite a lot of these stories I had were actually on pieces of paper. So I had to scan them in, I had to redo them. So although some of the stories are old, some of the stories are actually brand new because it was related to pictures. Actually, I had pictures and I had no words to go with them. So I had to rewrite words. So I thought it was going to be sort of quite an easy book to put together, but it wasn't. It took quite a bit of time. So it's me at the end of my career, David. As you know, I'm on a on a downward spiral at the moment, and I just thought, let's get it all out there. So, but I thought there was interesting stories in there, and there's actually, if you wanted to go and do some car dealing, there's some interviews I did with people about 25 years ago, and if you read them, there is actually fantastic advice there. You could actually use that information to go out and buy and sell cars tomorrow. So. It has all sorts of point. And there's a tiny bit, there's, pictures of cars that were for sale years ago, which were, they cost 2 and 6. And now, obviously, they're about £1 million. So it's a slight reflection of that, of how times have changed. But yeah, it's about the old days. It's about delayed gratification when you had to travel somewhere to look at a car. You took a picture of a car. You didn't know if the picture was OK because you had to go to the chemist to get it developed. So everything was a long way off. So it's a slight celebration of all of that. And yeah, you had to travel to the other end of the country to see a car. So I did actually go to Scotland. I did actually go to Wales. I did actually go to Northern Ireland as well as traveling around England. So there is a sort of a theme and a point to it all.
Indeed. And you also appeared in a Pop Stars video. We won't mention which one because, again, people should read that. But yeah. I'm certain that is you at the controls of that vehicle.
I don't know. There might have been a time slip there, David, maybe. But I manoeuvred the car for photographic purposes because the old boy driving the car flattened the battery quite quickly because he wasn't very good at driving. But it was an interesting thing to do. And again, that's something from the past in that I think people spent like several million quid on a pop video, which they don't do anymore because all music is rubbish these days.
Anyway, move on to the next part. Last week we covered Viva Las Vegas.
Oh, did we?
Starring that Elvis Presley chap, yes.
Yeah.
But this week I thought we could maybe go on to a slightly more serious film.
Yeah.
But an absolute topper of a film. In fact, I think it's marvellous. Mm. It's Magnum Force, starring Clint Eastwood as the one and only Dirty Harry. Mm. And there were some fantastic cars to be seen in that. Also shots of San Francisco, as it used to be. I can't remember the name of, was it the Embarcadero or whatever they called it, down at the waterfront. The roads all changed down there now.
Yeah, I was there about 20, 30 years ago, so I don't know whether it was still the same. I can't remember.
It would be. I think it was... Anyway, in the film, there are a selection of cars. And as in a lot of films, James... Mm. Perhaps the most interesting ones are the ones you just glimpse in the background.
Yeah.
There was quite a selection of foreign cars, especially for a film, shot in 1971-72.
Yeah.
And I spotted an Audi 100.
Right.
A Renault 16.
Goodness me.
Yeah. Blimey. A couple of Peugeot, so it was a 304, and I believe a 404 station wagon.
Yeah.
Some Fiats, including an 850 Coupe. And get this. Really, just got to get this. A Morgan Plus 4.
Wow.
Yeah. And obviously the cars that Dirty Harry and others drive, so many Fords and Chevrolets and Cadillacs. My favourite is, of course, the one driven by the, I suppose we have to use the right word here, the Pimp, which is a somewhat garish Cadillac Fleetwood Eldorado.
Yeah.
That anyone, I don't know how you expect to be taken seriously driving this car, because it looks ludicrous. It is ludicrous. But it does add some colour to the film. Not that it really needs it, because as I've said before, it's a great film. Also, if you like bikes, there's some topping bikes in it. Mm. I believe there's a Triumph Daytona in it near the end. And a Moto Guzzi, I believe, it's a V7 Police Special. There's various other ones. I think there's a Honda as well. So there's all sorts of cars and bikes. And if you like anything that moves, any form of transport, near the end of it, there's a scene that involves two old Jeep carriers. Now, in case you're wondering what a Jeep carrier is, these were carriers built as escort carriers for use in World War II. But they were hastily assembled, just thrown together. They're basically merchant ships with a flight deck on top. And because they were thrown together, which is called Jeep carriers, the British called them Woolworths carriers. There were a couple of those tied up in San Francisco Bay, which I believe were scrapped with a fairly short time after filming, which is quite sad because they're interesting little things.
Yeah. But I mean, old Clint is a bit of a car bloke anyway, isn't he? Because I think famously he did have a Mini Countryman, I think.
Did he?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember hearing stories about that ages ago, that he would tinker around with minis. Quite how he fitted into one, I don't know, David, but, you know.
Crikey, no, he's a big bloke. Jim Garner was another mini guy as well.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, two classy actors. I mean, really, you've got to say the absolute cream of the crop, those two. So what's your thoughts on Magnum Force, James, and particularly the vehicles?
I haven't seen it in detail for many years, but I have seen it several times, and I enjoy just about everything I think that Clint's done, even Firefox, I think, which was quite a good nonsense film. He doesn't make bad films, and obviously he does know his cars, as in Gran Torino, no less as well. Yeah. But the great thing about these films, as you point out, is that they are period pieces. So no one is scooting around trying to get cars and herd them into a particular area create some retro scene, which there's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood I like as a film. But you can get distracted by the fact that cars in that aren't always from the correct era. But I think that sort of snapshot, again, it's a bit like Viva Las Vegas, in that you don't realise the impact that European cars and sports cars had, in that certainly people on the California and on the West Coast would actually sort of buy Euro cars and actually use them. And as you say, I mean, to see, Peugeots and, a Renault is really quite remarkable. An Audi 100 as well. I mean, that's quite spectacular.
Mm. And thinking about it, of course, I mean, it's the West Coast of America. Mm. That's the furthest coast away from Europe.
It is.
Obviously, being near the East Coast, there's a 3,000-mile gap to the West Coast, so which makes it, I suppose, all the more remarkable that these cars were more popular in the West than they were in the East. I suppose in terms of British roads, etc., the weather is better in the West of California, but even so, they were a very long way from home at a time when perhaps global transportation systems weren't as efficient as they are now.
No, that's right.
But anyway, we do recommend the film, even if you don't like cars. If you don't like cars, what are you listening to this podcast for?
Yeah.
But even if you're not really bothered with seeing old cars in a film, watch the film. It's a terrific film. Probably not for the easily offended, but I love it. I don't care. So there we go. And that slightly brazen note, we'll just take a break. You're listening to Bangers and Classics, sponsored by the James Rapp at Home for semi-retired Hammer Horror Actresses. So back to Terra Firma for part two of the pod, and it's time for this week's Banger or Classic. And we're going French this week. It's the Rena Laguna Phase 1.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you didn't talk about the Phase 2 because that was a move in the wrong direction there. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a half bad rep special hatch, was it really? And the problem with them is that most of them have been driven into the tarmac and then largely neglected because people don't care about them. And that's a tiny bit of a shame. But it's a fairly forgettable car in some ways. It was an alternative to the Cavalier / Vectra and the Mondeo. They were quite nice to drive. But again, it's one of those things. It's as we often make the point, trying to find one for sale is very, very difficult. I know there was, you know, rust is now an issue, I think, with them. Heating system would corrode and air con would go and electricals. Gearbox is a bit weak and the locks break. But apart from that, they're fine.
Yeah. I mean, they replaced the Renault 21.
Yeah.
But they only came along the Laguna, I think, and the Hatch and Estate versions. Yeah. It wasn't the saloon. No. And I have to say, my abiding memory of the Laguna, certainly the Phase 1, was it was bland.
Yes.
It was a bit bland to look at. It was a bit bland to drive. And there was no equivalent of, you know, the Renault 21 turbo in the range.
No, that's true.
No. Though having said that, I remember you could hassle these things along quite nicely, apparently. I never drove one back in the day, but back when I was a lawyer, I remember I had to go to another court. There was a sheriff court that was divided, it covered two areas. So the main courthouse in one town, and there was a subsidiary courthouse probably 40 miles away in the second, because it was quite a remote area. And what happened was, when occasionally, maybe once every 2 weeks, you'd a day or two in the remote location. So everybody had to pack up and drive there and then drive back, including the sheriff, including the prosecutor that was the property fiscal, one of the clerks, etc. It was like wacky races going there, James. Mad scramble to get there. I remember once the prosecutor fiscal, his car was off the road and he had hired a Renault Laguna. It was wouldn't be long, it'd only be a year or so out at this point. And I thought, damn, I don't have a speed camera on me, so I could bust him. Because he wasn't obeying the speed limit, let me tell you. And he was the one that prosecuted speeders, as I was quick to remind him. he was a good guy. Very, very good lawyer. But that was my abiding memory of it. I thought, he can drive a car. And B, it can certainly belt along some fairly... fairly rugged road, shall we say. It did well in the BTCC, the racing version.
Yeah, didn't it?
Well, the Williams team ran it. And Alain Menu won the BTC championship with it in 1997.
Yeah.
So it did pretty well there. And its successor, as you identified, was, I think, even less of an exciting car. It was even duller. And, it was a bit of a shame because I feel at that time, Renault had produced some quite interesting, quite exciting cars. Before that, and it was an era when they sort of started to dumb things down. You had, for example, obviously the 1916 valve that I loved was replaced by the Megane. You had the 21, obviously the Halo model of the Turbo, being replaced by the Laguna, and so on and so forth. Don't know if that really was the right way to go. Anyway, tempted to say it's a banger, James. Tempted, just because it never excited me. Mm. But then I think not many of these left. And again, as we say, with a lot of cars that maybe aren't the most exciting, they do a good job nonetheless. They do sterling service. So I'm going to say, for me, it's somewhere between a classic and a banger. I wouldn't say it's a classic. I don't think there's any models in that range you would single out as being a classic, having classic potential. It may become a classic one day, but for the moment, it's somewhere in the hinterlands between the two.
Yeah, it's a banger, David,
So after that long rambling explanation by me, you were just to do a single word.
Yeah.
Right, I'm packing my bag then, that's it. So anyway, what else do we have to chat about? Oh yes, things we ain't got no more.
We've
done this a few times, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of things. I'm not so sure that these ones are so badly missed, I have to say. But we'll start off with manual chokes. Today, new drivers think, what's a manual choke? What would that be? We just get in the car, turn the key, and it starts. But in the old days, it wasn't like that.
No.
Not even into the 90s. Still, the cars with manual chokes where you pull a device on the dash out and it would make the fuel mixture richer to aid it with starting. And obviously, once the engine got up to a little bit of temperature, you had to push that in because the car wouldn't run well on a mixture that was too rich. So they're a bit of a pain in the bum, I have to say. But one thing, James, I like about them is because the reminder of the days when cars went without and went very well without costly and temperamental engine management computers. You know, when people could still fix cars. Nowadays, you go into a garage and what do they do? Ooh, it's your ECU, mate. It's going to be a grand to fix it.
Mm.
A lot of the time, that is the case.
Yeah.
In the old days, you know, it'd be a jackhammer, angle grinder, 5 minutes, you know, tub of polyfiller, and you'd be fixed and you'd be on your way.
No, that's right, David. Yeah. Well, I mean, three out of my four cars have manual chokes. So I'm on the choke side of history.
Really.
And actually, the one that doesn't, which is the Baby Shark BMW, I would fit that with a manual choke tomorrow, actually. And I might have to, because I find it so irritating. Because you still have to prime it, you know. You've still got to pump the accelerator. So effectively, you're sort of choking up. You're putting petrol where it should be. That's got an extremely basic automatic system. But I'm a very big fan of the choke. I feel it gives me control. I feel in charge. I feel I know what's going on.
That also can be said for it. But can you be so positive about wing mirrors? Because just as the term implies, the mirrors on the wing, they're not next to the door, they're not part of the door assembly, they're on the wings of cars.
Yeah.
And you won't get them nowadays because obviously they are a hazard to pedestrians in the event of a collision. They're also a bit of a fiddle to adjust as well. You couldn't exactly adjust them from inside the car. Maybe the passenger one you could, because the passenger leaning out the window of the very long stick or something, but that was it. I have to say, I don't really miss those so much. But I don't know, maybe you've got a different view.
Well, I've had a few cars with wing mirrors as such. And yeah, what you do need is a broom handle to make them of any use whatsoever. And I've actually got a box that is actually full of wing mirrors. And I've found them useful to take apart. And when door mirrors get smashed, I attach them. I've got one fitted to the Land Rover, the old lorry, which somebody wrote in and complained about, said it wasn't standard. So I've got a Morris Minor, you know, wing mirror, where you know, a Series 3 Land Rover one should be, and I don't care, and I quite like it. But some completists went, oh no, you can't do that. But actually, I can see. But no, you are completely right. It doesn't make any sense, unless of course you're towing. And you've got, you know, sometimes, but I would still have door mirrors. And I think that's what people have done. But yeah, there is a reason possibly for having them, that they might give you an even better field of vision. But I would not rely on them completely at all. And yeah, they are quite useless and forgettable.
Right. Well, we've got one more to do. Mm-hmm. I think before we do that, we'll take a very quick break. This is Bangers and Classics, the only motoring podcast mentioned in the Doomsday Book. Probably. Okay, and welcome back to the final segment of this week's podcast. Last thing we're going to talk about in the "we used to have these things, but we don't now" segment is 8-tracks. Do you remember those, James?
I do remember those, David. Yeah, they were oversized cassettes.
Yeah, well, oversized.
Oversized.
The players were the size of a coffee table. Which is great. Which, of course, you couldn't lose the damn things.
No, that's right.
Fortunately, they weren't very portable, you know. You had to leave them in the car because you were too heavy to lift out of it.
Yeah.
You'd have a team of Sherpas behind you carrying your 8-track.
Exactly. But they were very good quality, though. The sound reproduction was very good on when they weren't unspooling or doing anything.
Yeah. I mean, again, as you see with cassettes as well, if you had an 8-track, same with even a CD or a DVD, you feel that you actually own something. It's not just the alternative version of vaporware. Vaporware, of course, usually means something that's been promised and doesn't exist. But in my estimation, vaporware also means things like download or you view over a connection, you stream rather. Vaporware can also mean things you stream. You don't actually own it. It's just a stream of data from one terminal to another. There's no joy in that, I don't think. Because I like to, you know, like having a book. You know, it's nice to feel a book in your hand. It's nice to turn the pages. Same with a CD. It's nice to have it here. It's spinning. Put it in a rack or whatever. And just think, yeah, go and watch it anytime I want. I love that. And yeah, I mean, 8-tracks, you'd have to have a blooming big rack to store a few of those.
Yeah.
It probably has to be made out of, oh, I don't know, titanium or something to hold the weight of the damn things. By the mid-70s, really, they weren't a thing anymore, I think.
No,
James.
That's right. They fell out of favour extremely quickly, didn't they?
Yeah. Because I remember my uncle's car having one. Mm. And he... all sorts of things like Neil Diamond, etc. in it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, as you say, the sound quality was very good. And on a purely sound quality basis alone, yeah, bring them back by all means. I don't mind that they're big. You know, I kind of like that, really. Because we downsize everything. It's not always a good thing, I don't think.
No, it's not.
No, but there we go. Anyway, before we move on to the final segment of the podcast, next week is the 50th episode of Bangers and Classics.
Is it?
Yeah, apparently it is.
Wow.
There's a memo here that I wrote to myself earlier. Yeah. I don't remember writing it. Saying next week's the 50th. So we've got some very special guests lined up for that.
Have we?
We have, yes. Yes. Well, we haven't actually, but we'll try and find some. Maybe that Alvis Parsley chap, I don't know.
Yeah, he could pop in.
Yeah, give us a tune. We'll see what we can do anyway. We'll make an effort for this one, will we?
Yeah.
we can try.
We can, absolutely.
We can but try. So tune in for that next week because we'll try and do something a bit special. Do something a bit different.
I wouldn't raise listeners' hopes, David. Crushing disappointment.
As long as you listen first, then get crushing disappointment, James. Yeah. That's fine. No, we could run a competition, I suppose, couldn't we?
Could we? Oh, okay.
We could do, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
What junk? I mean, what interesting artifacts have we got to give away?
Well, I'm sure we can find something or other.
Yeah. Anyway, right, we'll sort that out in due course. Anyway, it's time for the Danger Zone.
All right.
Yeah, Highway to the Danger Zone, starring Mr. Ruppert. And this week's Danger Mobile is the Ford Scorpio.
Yeah.
Would you believe, James, that in the 90s, the late 90s, there were over 31,000 of these licensed in the UK?
Yeah.
The latest figure from the DVLA, which I obtained from the excellent How Many Are Left website, which we always, as ever, we thoroughly recommend, was 205. With a further 1,095 on Soren, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're falling quickly. And Scorpio was really, effectively, it was a Mark IV Granada.
Yeah, yeah.
In Europe, the Mark III Granada was known as the Scorpio.
Mm.
From the mid-80s to the early 90s, we had the Mark III Granada in this country. In Europe, it was the Scorpio. And all we got here in terms of the word Scorpio was it was a trim level on the Mark III Granada. But then when it came up for replacement in 1994, they gave us the Scorpio, which was the Mark II for everyone else and the Mark I for us. And, well, what can we say about that, James? Do you want to take us on with that one?
Well, I was trying to find, actually, in my brochure collection. I used to have a Scorpio one, and I've misplaced it. I found a lot of other things. I actually found a Granada paperwork, but I certainly didn't find anything to do with Scorpio, which is a shame. It's one of those cars which was, a contemporary car for me, but is now as old as the hills, and that also goes for me as well. I always thought they were great value. It was one of those cars which, the inexorable rise of the German prestige, never mind where this car was made, sort of made them obsolete, really, didn't it? Because people would rather have a Bavarian badge or a Stuttgart badge or wherever than something that said Ford on it. Yet these were great value cars, extremely well equipped, very comfortable, and relatively straightforward to run and cost effective to run as well. And the fuel might have been a bit heavy on the V6, but I think they were fairly magnificent cars, working class area manager type vehicles. And I've got a lot of time for them. Yeah, they were packed with kit, and they were great. And there was also the 24 valve version as well, wasn't there?
Cosworth, yeah.
Which was a real Cosworth.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, something like a Scorpio Ultima, people may not know, what they look like. I mean, again, by the end of its career, people didn't like its fish face. That didn't really matter too much. But again, it's another car which has completely disappeared. You know, you would always see them around because as they fell down the ownership scale, the bottom of the pyramid, you would still see them knocking about with people because they were good value to buy. And run, but they have now all gone, as you say. 205 is quite incredible to from thousands on the road.
It is. Yeah, I mean, the only thing, well, a couple of points there, James. I mean, you're talking about working class cars, area managers.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine that most area managers are akin to the wall snob.
Yeah.
they won't think they're working class, even if they are. They'll have forgotten that it's pretty damn quickly, at least in my experience anyway. The other big problem with the Scorpio, apart from the German invasion, if we can put it that way, was the fact that it looked like a carbuncle on wheels.
Mm.
That was the problem. The light treatment, the front end treatment, was pretty ghastly. It went from an attractive enough car in the Granada Mark III to something that was pretty grotesque on the Scorpio. The rear lights weren't much better, I have to say.
No, they weren't, were they?
The estate version was better because it didn't have that horrible rear light treatment that it couldn't have. However, it didn't last very long either. It only lasted 4 years, which is a short period of time for Ford. Normally, you get to 4 or 5 years and you get a restyled version, you get a rehash. But they didn't bother this time. They just let it go. And worse still, they didn't actually replace it.
No, they didn't.
So this is really the end of the Granada line, if you want to look at it in those terms. So for that reason alone, they have to be worth saving. Because what happened was they brought out, the Scorpio went in 98, it went about 2000, they brought in the Mark II Mondeo. I mean Mondeo. Freudian slip there. Not really. You know, the Mondeo itself being originally a replacement for the Sierra, and the Mark II Mondeo was effectively a replacement for the Mark I Mondeo and the Scorpio in one. Performed one function better than the other, I have to say. It was never really a proper replacement for the Scorpio or for the Granada line of cars. And that's it, really. They're not bad cars. The looks are somewhat challenging. But if you can live with that, and frankly, it's not really a big deal, is it? Let's be honest. They're not new cars. They're interesting old cars now.
Yeah.
And they're worthy of being saved because really they are the last of the sort of really big executive class Fords of that line anyway, of the Granada line. You know, that's it. And there's so few left, in 205. And the figures are dropping every year.
Mm.
So again, it won't be that long. And this is the problem as we see it, James.
Yeah.
That more modern classics, a lot of people just don't have the enthusiasm for.
No,
they might have for an MGB. And the trouble is, you run down to, you get to a situation where there's maybe 50 or 60 or fewer left. And what happens then? You know, they will eventually become extinct. There'll be one or two left in the roads, and that'll be it. And that's a shame. Because these cars, you know, whatever you thought of them back in the day, they all performed a good job in some ways. They performed valuable functions and they deserve a better fate than the one they're seemingly headed for. And that's really all I can say about it.
No, but it is true what you say, David. It's and it's worth pointing out, yeah, you can, in a way, you trace these back to Zodiacs and Zephyrs. So.
Mm. That's true, yeah. Mm. You know, there's a long lineage and that's near the end of it, the end of that particular line. Anyway, we can do something about it. Buy a Scorpio. They're not expensive, I don't think, to buy. There's not many left. And, you know, everybody will look at you. But hey, so what? And anyway, so next week, as we said, is the 50th episode of Bangers and Classics, if we manage to fix the clutch and lurch along that far. We hope to see you then. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Yeah, we'd better go and sort something out for next week then. I better go and do some work. For a change.
One of the things we do hope to bring you is an interview live from the home for former Hammer Horror Actresses, proprietor Mr. J. Rupert Esquire.
Yeah.
But we'll have to wait and see.
I'm a sleeping partner in that business.
Oh! He didn't say that, but he did. Anyway, we better get out of here before it gets any worse.
Okay, cheers. Goodbye.